All right.
Thank you, Hans. Good afternoon, everyone. So at this meeting, we plan to complete three deliberations of references to the conceptual framework. We have two papers for discussion. Agenda paper 10B discusses applying the amendment to paragraph 11 of IS 8 to rate regulated activities. And agenda paper 10C discusses the due process summary for references to the conceptual framework. With that, I'm turning over to agenda paper 10B. In January, you decided to confirm the proposal to replace the reference to the framework in paragraph 11 of IS 8 with the reference to the conceptual framework. That paragraph discusses developing accounting policies in the absence of an applicable IFRS standard. However, you decided to consider whether rate-regulated activities should be excluded from applying the amendment. This is because revising accounting policies for rate-regulated activities could increase diversity in practice and could lead to two rounds of accounting changes in the short period of time, which would be disruptive to users of financial statements and also for preparers. So agenda paper 10B discusses the scope of any such potential exclusion from applying that amendment and also whether entities should be exempt, that is permitted but not required to apply the amendment, or whether entities should be prohibited from applying that amendment. There are three questions in agenda paper 10B, and I would like to take them one by one. And also just to remind you that any potential exclusion from applying the amendment to IS 8 would only apply to entities that develop policies for rate-regulated activities by reference to framework. It will not apply to entities that use IFRS 14 to develop accounting policies for rate-regulated activities. So we think that any potential exclusion from applying the amendment to IS 8 should only apply to regulatory account balances which are not addressed by existing IFRS standards. It should not apply to other aspects of accounting for rate-regulated activities that are covered by existing IFRS standards. Accordingly, we recommend that any such exclusion would only apply to regulatory account balances that are included or are expected to be included by rate regulator as defined in IFRS 14 in establishing the rates that can be charged to customers and that are not recognized as an asset or a liability in accordance with other IFRS standards. This approach and the terminology and the definition are consistent with those in IFRS 14. Our recommendation is set out in paragraph 17 of agenda paper 10B. Do you agree with the staff recommendation?
We do. Oh, Mary.
I have a fundamental concern that I think comes up in question three, not question one, but I want to flag up a concern with paragraph 9B, which is in the run-up to question one. And question 9B says that the hierarchy will send you to the conceptual framework in the absence of IFRSs that apply. Right now, we don't have, to the best of my knowledge, scope exclusions and standards for rate-regulated activities. So that if I'm a rate-regulated entity, and this goes to how many entities should have developed accounting policies looking only to the conceptual framework, rather than looking to the conceptual framework as context for applying the existing standards. If I have, let's say, expenditures that I have incurred to repair storm damage or something like that, the question is, does this give me a right to recovery? If it gives, if I'm promised a specific amount by the regulator, it's either a financial asset, in which case it'd be within the scope of IS 39 or IFRS 9, depending upon which I'm applying. Or if it gives me a right to recover but not a promise, then I think I'd have to look, for example, at IS 38 and say, does this meet the recognition criteria for an intangible asset? There is no exclusion in IS 38 that doesn't apply to activities that are subject to rate regulation. So this is an explanation of why I question for 9B how entities could be recognized, you know, have developed policies based solely on the conceptual framework that don't consider the requirements of applicable standards, even if the standard does not say this also applies to costs incurred in connection with rate-regulated activities. I'm talking about the current requirements of IFRS. I'm not talking about what we may do or what we did in IFRS 14. You know, to be perfectly clear. So the reason I'm saying this is I think it's very important what we end up saying about what we expect rate-regulated entities to do between now and when we complete our rate-regulated project. And I don't want somebody to build off of paragraph 9B and say the board has confirmed that there are no standards in IFRS that apply specifically to, you know, to rate-regulated accounting, and I just go to the conceptual framework and develop policies based on those. I think you have to explain why you're outside the scope of existing
standards. So your
standards.
Point is the waterfall is it takes you to other standards first.
Yes, yeah. And so I think the staff is right to look at this issue of should we have special transition with respect to updating the references for rate-regulated entities, because in part because the conceptual framework provides context for how they've applied existing requirements. And the issues you raise of should we put them through two rounds of change, et cetera. But I think the implication that there's absolutely nothing in IFRS that is required to be applied when it comes to rate-regulated activities is an incorrect message to send.
Maybe if I could quickly respond, maybe Jane wanted to add something as well. So the intention of paragraph 9B was not to imply that framework is the only sort of applicable source for those accounting policies. And we were trying at least to be very deliberate in saying that in practice, entities would look to the framework. And in practice, we understand that most entities would not recognize assets and liabilities for regulatory account balances. So we might not be entirely clear, but that was not an intention to suggest that you would not apply the waterfall. Yeah. And maybe Jane wanted something as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is particularly difficult because you're absolutely right, Mary. You know, it's have we got a right to recover some cash flows? Where in these cases, it's not clear. Well, most people would agree that we're not going to be in IFRS 9 because there isn't an absolute guarantee that one party is going to pay that cash flow. And you're right, there's no specific exclusion, but I think the whole crux of the rate-regulated project is there is such a lack of clarity around, you know, these rights and obligations that come through the regulatory agreement. The existing standards don't specifically address those, so people are not clear whether they are in a particular standard or not, because the standards were not written with these types of rights and obligations in mind.
Jane, I agree that they weren't written with those types of rights and obligations as an example in mind. I think the question of how much fuzziness is there about whether there those rights and obligations are in those standards is people who want to get out of them arguing that they don't apply because they don't like the answers, as opposed to there's real lack of clarity in scope. I think the questions that we're addressing in the rate-regulated, and I'm drawing that maybe starker than it is, but I think the questions we're addressing in the project are, the project that we're undertaking to set requirements is, do applying existing IFRS give the most useful information about those rights and obligations, and should we develop a different accounting model for a certain subset of rights and obligations, not because of lack of clarity, which would be an interpretive project, but because, you know, we're looking at whether or not the requirements should be amended, you know, to give a more faithful, you know, representation. So let's be really careful about saying there's total lack of clarity about what applies, because I think there's far less lack of clarity in terms of how the waterfall works.
Councillor Miles.
I'm puzzled by your comments, because with all the work that has been done around that rate regulated project to date, if the conclusion could be that some assets and liabilities should be recognized to date applying the existing standards, the current practice would be very much in default. So if the issue is, let's not forget that there is a waterfall in our standard, I support. But if your comment aims at saying, hey, don't suggest that basically the reference after the waterfall would be the conceptual framework, you would not be in agreement with that statement, I really question.
What, Francoise, you said at the beginning that all the work that has been done is to see whether assets and liabilities should be recognized under the current standards. I don't think that's what our rate-regulated project is about. It's whether there should be a new standard that would require recognition of assets or liabilities for those activities. I am raising this point not in respect of the conceptual framework definition of assets and liabilities, but rather the applicability before you get to the general elements definition of the requirements of individual standards that have no scope exclusion for rate regulated.
So Mary, essentially what you're saying is that people have applied current standards, and those current standards have told them they're not allowed to recognize it, potentially. So for example, the intangible standard, they have applied that.
They should have applied that.
Yes. As opposed to having to say there's no standard.
Right.
I fully agree with what Mary just said. I think we're moving around whether we're talking about current practice based on the current standards plus conceptual framework, or we are talking about new arena. I think we are talking about the current practice, and the current practice when the company make judgment. I personally view they follow it. They will take into consideration first the established standards, including the IFIC decisions. This is why before the new project, in our world, companies, I'm not sure whether 99% of companies not use it. And so I think we should be very careful. I will fully agree with Mary just said.
So if I can understand what we're getting to, the objective is clear. We don't want these companies or companies qualifying within the scope to have to consider whether or not they should make changes as a consequence of the new framework. We want to do that without implying that they might have had to refer to the old framework in the first place. So it's essentially a, to the extent that you may have had to consider the framework in your previous.
Right.
You do not have to consider the fact that there's a revised.
And that's
but
why we
that to the extent that becomes important.
And that's
phrase.
Why we tried to capture this idea of these regulatory balances, because these are and that's driving the current project. These are the residual amounts that we've looked at the existing standards and picked up those.
I think Mary's point would be if I've got those residual balances, I may even now have got to the conclusion that they are not assets through applying one of our standards instead of through applying the framework. So the extent is to the extent that I may previously have considered the framework, I do not have to revisit.
Do not have to or must not?
Must not. Well,
well that's
a
question three.
That's a separate
question.
Yeah.
That's the fundamental one. All right.
So on question one, was it everyone's then, Mary? Were you in favor of question one? Which is scope?
It's a scope exclusion with that just understanding.
With related account balances.
And well, to the extent that.
Subject to Mary's wording.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Daryl's actually.
Let's move on.
Okay, so moving on to question two then, which discusses whether any exclusion should apply only to existing accounting policies or also new policies. We think that any exclusion should also apply to new accounting policies for regulatory account balances. that would help entities that newly conduct trade regulated activities make their financial reporting comparable with other entities in the industry. Do you agree with our recommendation?
To the extent that.
To the extent that.
So,
now, after the initial skirmishes, we get to the.
Can we count 11 and 1?
Yeah. Sorry, question 2, Francoise, you didn't vote in favour, is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in favour of the exemption so that people don't have to look into it, but I don't support the difference that is made between the old and the new conceptual framework. So in other words, I do not support the implicit statement that you would, if applying the new conceptual framework, end up with drastically different answers that would make your accounting policies not comparable with those that would have been defined with the conceptual framework, the existing ones.
Therefore, you would not distinguish between.
It's whether it should. The question is whether it should apply to both new.
Yeah.
And old, I already apply and exist, so I support that these people are exempted. But someone would be starting and having such an accounting policy, I can't see why we would have them to look at the old framework and not the new one. And the argument which is provided in favor of that is the fact that you would come to more comparable outcomes if you were applying the old one. So that suggests that you have such drastic difference between the two that you can come with so dissimilar outcomes. And I do not support the underlying premise that lead to making the distinction.
Maybe if I could just, I don't think that was the intended meaning of it. I think with the new policies, you're not, it's just that you haven't got the similar lots of changes because you didn't have an existing policy to change and then change again. But I think what we were implying here is that even if you are coming new into rate regulated activities, we don't think that using the new framework would necessarily give you different answers than the old framework. You're still going to have to go through the same long debates, etc. And so we were trying to exclude the new policies, because again, whatever policy people came up with, you could still argue there is increasing diversity because they're doing something different than other people. They're still likely to be faced with another change once the board has completed its conclusions on the rate-regulated project.
And I guess the advantage of saying yes to this question is it means that if I'm starting out in this industry for the first time now, I can kind of do what everybody else in the industry is doing. I don't have to go through a new argument, which may well come to exactly the same answer, but have to engage in a completely new argument. I can rely on existing guidance for that industry and the place I'm operating.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, rate regulation schemes are different, so you need an analysis and come to answers which are specific to what your rate regulation contract. And also, I mean, if we believe that the conceptual framework is an improvement over the existing one, why would we not want that somebody that applies, which select an accounting policy for the first time, would come up with a better answer, an easier answer than otherwise? So well, anyway, that's my position. I'm happy to
okay.
be isolated.
We voted, so...
Moving on to question 3, and question 3 is about whether entities should be exempt or prohibited from applying that amendment to their regulatory account balances. So if the board were to go forward with the exemption, it would help those entities who do not wish to revise their accounting policies, but it would not necessarily stop entities from revising their policies if they wanted to do so. And we think that revising accounting policies as a result of replacing references would be undesirable, because that could lead to 2 rounds of accounting change and it could lead to increased diversity in practice. And therefore, our recommendation in the paper is that entities should be prohibited from applying that amendment to their regulatory account balances. Do you agree with our recommendation?
Mary?
I actually think that there are valid concerns that are expressed in this paper about why forcing or having two rounds of change is not useful to users of financial statements, the disruption of the series, the time spent, the risk of increasing diversity in practice by what we say. I just think there's a better way to do it than doing something that first of all, I think ultimately will not be effective at stopping people from making voluntary changes by, let's say, reconsidering things or making arguments under notionally the old conceptual framework, because like Françoise, I think that the changes we've made between old and new don't create any stark differences that somebody points to and says, aha, this changes fundamentally my thinking. I think in order to accomplish the objective that you have, and I share that objective, we'd be much more effective to lay out the concerns that led us to create this exemption and articulate what the hurdles would be in the specific case for anybody making a change in accounting policy. That includes, one, you don't get to look at debates underway in standard setting projects, and I'm talking about a rate regulated project, because I think an analysis that says, well, we know the board is heading in this direction, so we think it's more useful to try and align with the anticipated direction. And I've heard arguments like that in the past. I think to explain our concern about loss of comparability across time, our concern about increasing diversity of practice, if we lay those all out in the explanation for why we grant an exception, I think then it establishes a hurdle that somebody who wants to make a voluntary change has to demonstrate why, despite the concerns that the board expressed in this area, they think that the voluntary change meets the criteria in IS-8 for a voluntary change in accounting principle. And if that's the case, then they should go ahead and make it. But I think we do far more favors to the world as a whole to lay out what all the concerns are in the basis for conclusion for why we are granting, this exemption, and leave it there to people to demonstrate how they satisfy that, because I think we cannot prevent the ones who want to manipulate from trying to do so, and those are the only ones we would try to prevent with a prohibition rather than just relief. So I think we should just make it voluntary.
But maybe if I could quickly respond to Mary's comments. I think we agree. I suppose the fact that we recommend prohibiting rather than exempting does not mean that we will not set out all the reasons for why we're doing so, as you just discussed. And we also think that, if all these reasons are clearly set out, it would be very difficult for an entity to make a case for a voluntary change, because if they wanted to do so, first of all, with the prohibition, the relevant document would still be old framework, and they would also have to go through all the rest of the waterfall in IS-8. And also they would need to argue, well, how a change in policy makes information more relevant, which would be very hard to do in light of the arguments about two sets of accounting changes and about increased diversity in practice. So in other words, we think that even with the prohibition, it does not give entities extra opportunities to make a voluntary change. In fact, we think that it will still prevent from both voluntary change and change resulting from replacing reference.
Daryl?
So I'm slightly concerned we might be running around in circles here. Mm-hmm. So essentially our answer to the first question suggests that we think that some people may well get a different outcome if they do look at the different framework, or at the very least they're going to have to go through a different analysis. But we wouldn't, I don't think, have made that come to that decision if we didn't think that the new framework could have an effect on these companies. I think if we then assume that they could have an effect, we have the potential of creating three possible different frameworks, the old framework, the new framework, and IFRS 14, as potential ways that these companies could account. So if I assume that my answer to the first question was justified, that yes, we will allow them to use the old one because we think it could make a difference, then it feels to me like I don't want three different frameworks. If I don't actually think there's going to be three different frameworks because I think there's no difference, then I should have said no to the first question. So I'm inclined to say, assuming I got it right the first time, I think I got it right the second time, and I'm going to say yes again.
And I think this goes back to your point, Daryl, as well, for the previous question, that we're just trying to avoid having to go through lots and lots of new debates when we feel that the new framework still isn't conclusive and people could reach different conclusions. You know, whichever framework they're in, they're going to get different answers.
Let's, quick, and then enter this matter.
Just wanted to make sure that I had correctly understood, because we have been provided with what the amendment would be. So basically, the prohibition is a prohibition to apply the new conceptual framework, and that's it.
To regulate the economic balance.
Okay, all in favor?
11, 10.
Okay. Due process.
Thank you. Yeah, we saved as always the most exciting paper for the last bit. Unless you have any comments or questions on the background and the analysis of the compliance with the due process steps in paragraphs 3 to 17, I would like to go straight to the first question.
Please.
And ask the board whether you agree that you've undertaken all mandatory and non-mandatory due process steps. Paper. Thank you. Paragraph 18 to 20 discuss the re-exposure. We heard we identified two areas where we slightly changed the proposal.
We cannot possibly finish this without question two.
This was as always to find out if you pay attention.
It's an important step in our due process. We answer all the questions.
Maybe we should re-expose because of that. What do you think?
Okay, question three.
So the question is, apart from what we just discussed, rate-regulated activities and the IFRS 3 exclusion, are you happy to proceed and not to re-expose the references?
Okay.
Question four, which is question three, to make it all very confusing. Would you grant us the permission to ballot? And also one important question, does any board member intend to dissent from the publication of references to the conceptual framework?
I think I might, in part because of the rate-regulated issue we just discussed, and also the use of under cost and effort rather than impracticable for the retrospective application.
Okay.
I've not decided to dissent from it, but I'm still expecting to say, and it will be determinant in my decision, the basis for conclusions and how the analysis has been reflected and also the effect analysis we produced. And if I can, on that basis, convince myself that indeed no, the cost would not be too heavy, I would not dissent.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.